Hello and welcome to the Gambling Files podcast, the podcast that's got a shiny new website that it wants you to go and look at. Yes. I'm one of your hosts, John Bruford, joined by your other host, Fenton Costello. Fenton, hello.
So what I love about this is like Schrodinger's website. Maybe it's live, maybe it's not live. And
it'll be
the
live.
Goal for the listener is go check the website and see if it's live or not.
And if it isn't, email John and say.
Tell him to hurry the fuck up. We agreed this in January.
We did, yeah, we did. It's been a busy year, Fenton.
Uh-huh.
For you, more than me, to be fair.
No, I'm super excited about the new website.
No, it is exciting. So
it's been so long coming, so it's great.
I hope it's good too. Yeah. No, but the idea was that we've launched the offshoot website Desert Island Discs, and that's ramping up in the next couple of weeks as well. We've got loads of episodes of that recorded.
Offshoot podcast, not offshoot website.
Yes, that's what I said. So I've got offshoot podcast. That's sorted, and it's got a landing page now on the newly sexy website. We've launched the Gambling Book Awards, and so the next step in that is relaunching the website. Now, the main thing about the new website is that we are featuring long form articles.
Yeah.
So no news, just shit that we think you might find interesting. So some of it might be gambling adjacent, and some of it will be gambling related.
It's the podcast in written form. Interesting, thoughtful, long-form content.
Oh, no, you're serious. Sorry.
I'm really serious.
Fuck.
Sponsorship's available. it's the written extension of the podcast. Thoughtful, long-form, and we're trying to avoid turning a website into an epilepsy test. Being thoughtful about if we place an advertisement or not against the content. I think the other thing we were super adamant on is if somebody's writing for the website, they're going to get paid for that article. I think there's quite a lot of free journalism happening within the space, or free writing happening within the space.
Yeah.
And I'm not I think people, we always say we love writers and we want writers to get paid. Or content creators to get paid. So that was a big thing for us. And yeah, we've got some really thoughtful kind of launch pieces, and we're looking for more. And, it's going to be a really nice addition to the media empire.
And this also ties in really nicely with the Gambling Book Awards.
Mm.
Because doing the Book Awards introduces us to authors who have an interest in or adjacency to gambling, etc. It provides us with a new pool of talent, people that we can commission, people that we could use excerpts from the books, we could do interviews, we can do all sorts. So that's,
we've got lots of plans for this.
I think it's going to be pretty sexy.
I think so.
One of the things we're going to be kicking off with is we're doing the history of playing cards, which was inspired obviously by the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
The episode we did with it was Daniel Crouch, wasn't it?
Yep.
That was a head fuck, that episode was.
Mm.
I learned loads. You think you'd know that where things come from and stuff, but no, I didn't. So we followed that up with a deeper explanation so that's the kind of thing we're going to be looking at, and things that are just interesting. So that's the plan. So check it out at www.. Do you know the URL, Fenton?
TheGamblingPiles.com.
Jesus, you're good. So do that. Now, today's episode,
mm-hmm.
this is different. This is because we're recording this before we actually record the episode. Normally we record the intro afterwards so we can say, so this episode's about blah, blah, blah. So people can see if they want to listen to it, Mm-hmm. But today we're like, could be about anything, couldn't it?
Could be anything.
What do you think it's going to be about?
Well, if I look ahead in our content calendar.
Have you got a content calendar?
I have a feeling, well, we both do, mate. I have a feeling it's going to be probably talking about something affiliate related. Or whoever this lady is. Something digital wellness related. So yeah, it could be either of those two topics or a third one. Who knows?
What are you looking at?
I'm looking at our diary for next Tuesday.
Oh no. I know who we're talking to.
Who are we talking to, John?
We're talking to one of our sponsors.
Oh, it's we're with that. Okay, we're that thingy. Okay, so then it's Jeff. We're talking to Jeff.
Yes, Jeff Laniardo.
From Optimove Americas.
Yep.
And
talking about sweeps.
Ooh, that's a good topic. Just before ice.
Yeah.
Or sorry, G2E.
But that ties in neatly with something that you've got to read out.
I do. Hang on, let me find the email from Olivia. One sec. She was so thoughtful.
It is really helpful when people spell shit out because it makes it even less likely that I can fuck it up.
Well, that is true. That is true. And then you still manage to find a way.
But it means that I have to put in a lot of effort.
So what Optimove would like you to know is they are running an exclusive sweepstakes industry breakfast.
Exclusive.
They're going to have top names from the industry. They're going to be sharing a lot of insights, a lot of data. It'll always be amazing food because it's Optimove and they do a great job on that. There's a link in the description as long as John has remembered to put it in. And please, if you're in the sweepstakes space or sweepstakes adjacent, register, get yourself down there and enjoy some food and pick up some knowledge.
There you go. Can't say fairer than that. But before you do that, have a listen to this episode because, you know, it's also good and relevant.
You sneak peek what's going to happen.
Yeah. You'd be able to go into the breakfast meeting and be all like, you'll have a load of questions that we'll probably give you in this podcast episode. You'll go in there, you'll strut in there like Billy Big Bollocks and you'll go, so have any of you seen Cobra Kai?
Oh, and they're going to have David Jumper there from Arb Interactive, Matt Kaufman from Elliers and Krychek. So that's going to be, you know, that's some interesting speakers.
Yeah, there's some brains there.
Mm, for sure.
Not that there wouldn't be without them, you know.
I get it, but it's insightful.
That's it, insight. That's it. It's a good job you're here to add the insight to us.
The words.
It's also worth mentioning our other sponsors. We are also sponsored very kindly by Clarion Gaming, organizers of ICE, which is coming up in January. We love them long time. We're also hosting the Gambling Book Awards at ICE. And if you want any information about that, go to www.gamblingbookawards.com. It's something that's completely unique, totally new to the industry. And luckily, Fintan's involved. So...
what could go wrong?
Everybody wins.
Everybody.
And finally, last but certainly not least, we're sponsored by Every Matrix. Now, Fenton, just give me a moment. I've just got to get my Every Matrix thing in front of me. Do you know what Every Matrix have done, Fenton?
What have they done, John?
Do you know what they do, I should say, probably?
I do know what they do.
They specialize in delivering advanced turnkey platform technology to the global regulated iGaming and lottery industries with outstanding results.
That sounds exactly like what they do, yeah. But that feels like there's more.
Fincher, I'm not lying to you when I say they're powering the world's biggest brands.
They are, for sure, in multiple jurisdictions.
They are solving your biggest challenges.
Well, I don't know if they focus on my biggest challenge. He's called John.
You'd be lost without me, Fintan. Sure. Yeah, it would be success after success and you wouldn't know what to do with yourself.
My momentum ore. Just keep me humble.
I'm your anchor. I'm keeping you grounded. Or underwater, one of the other. Yeah. And they are taking your business to the next level.
They would. If I was in that business, they absolutely would take it to the next level.
Every matrix, Fintan. Mm-hmm. Everything is possible.
Nice.
Never a truer word said on this podcast.
I agree.
Although there has been a lot of truth on this podcast. So,
too much for the BCG. Running gag.
Oops. Yeah, you should be careful or you'll stop getting their emails.
They wouldn't dare. You know who I am.
Yeah, you're that twat Bruford's friend. Anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So this episode, we're meeting Jeff Laniardo and talking sweeps.
Brilliant.
So enjoy the episode. We're joined by this week's guest, the appropriately named Jeff Laniardo. I say appropriately because that's his name. Jeff is Director of Sales for Optimove. Now, Jeff, can you tell me what's the difference between a Director of Sales and a Sales Director?
Big differences. The order, namely, is the sequence of words is the biggest difference. No difference. Been here about 6 years. And I've been representing the U.S. and Canadian market for Optimove. I'm based out of the New York City area. And yeah, excited to be chatting. I hear your people tell me that the Joe Rogan of the gaming podcast world, and I do see the resemblance.
We do share a barber.
They're both short.
One of us could kill you, though. You choose which one. Jeff, I've got a question for you, and this is to just frustrate people who are just listening to the audio version. What's the shirt with your name on in the background there, number 9?
It is a hockey jersey. So grew up playing hockey in New Jersey and still am trying to relive my glory days playing well into my 30s. And yeah, I played for the U.S. ball hockey team earlier this year, traveled up to Buffalo for a tournament. And yeah.
But when you say ball hockey, is that what people also call field hockey? It's not like...
No, it's not. So in the UK, people kind of think it's field hockey. So no, it's basically ice hockey on foot, on shoes. So you run around, very big in Canada, pretty big in the U.S.
So is it like an ice hockey stick?
Yeah, everything's the same. Gloves, helmet, stick,
puck,
but just the ball on foot.
Not on rollerblades, right?
Correct.
Wow. Okay. That's cool. I've never heard of that.
Well, I mean, street hockey is essentially that.
Yeah, that's right. So they have like it in London too. I have played in the UK.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So you're an international athlete.
Sure.
That is pretty cool. How many international athletes have we had on this podcast, Fintan?
A few. I'm sure. We have.
I can only think of one.
I've raced abroad.
For your country.
Oh, no. You're ridiculous.
That's the key.
Way better than me.
No, I can only think of one, and that was actually on the Bruford Files, not the Gambling Files. That was Matt Brown.
Interesting. Well, this is cool. Our first international star. Nice.
Yeah.
I like that. So, Jeff, we've before this episode, we were doing the ad read, and the ad read was talking about the Optimover hosting a breakfast at G2E, all about sweepstakes. Mm. And sweepstakes are obviously, you know, a very hot topic in the US. And, you know, obviously you've got, you know, prediction markets, but straight behind that right now, sweepstakes are a solid, like, this is a big business. For those not familiar with the American market, what is a sweeps casino and how does it operate?
Sure. Yeah, maybe I'll give a little bit of context on the U.S. market and what's led up to this point. So again, I've been here for about 6 years. And since the repeal of PASPA in 2018, which largely opened up online gaming, in the U.S. we have 50 states. Each state has their own regulatory framework that allows or doesn't allow either online sports betting or online casino. And over the last 6-7 years, online sports betting has become fairly pervasive. I'd say a high 30s out of 50 states have online sports betting, but online casino has been very limited. So depending on how you measure it, 6 or 7 states have online casino, a few very small states in there. It's largely Michigan, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania that have online casino. And so there is this, A, there's this pent-up demand for online casino that, you know, we have not been able to push through the regulatory framework in each state. And there's also just the economics of casino being a more profitable business than sports betting. And so I won't use the L word that rhymes with schmoophole, but there is this, you know, legal opening that online casinos have taken advantage of that allows them to operate an online casino model through the sweepstakes, under sweepstakes law. So zooming out for a second, I think, you know, the most famous example of sweepstakes is McDonald's. So McDonald's runs, I don't know if they, how often they still do it, but when I was a kid, it was every year they would run the Monopoly promotion, right? You go to McDonald's, you buy a cheeseburger, you get a ticket. You, with that ticket, you have a chance to win $1 million. That's sort of the exchange effectively, but McDonald's doesn't have a gaming license, right? McDonald's doesn't have to go through the scrutiny and the regulation of being an online gaming operator, but I buy a burger and I have a chance of winning money or a free burger or whatever the prize is. And the reason that they're not an not a regulated casino or a sports book or online operator is because they operate under this sweepstakes law, which has been around for decades, and it allows companies to run sweepstakes. There's a bunch of different criteria they have to fit, they have to meet, but they can have these giveaways. And the way that it works in the sweepstakes casino world, bringing us now forward to what's happening now, is you know, essentially there's two different currencies. I can go on a site, I can make a purchase. Typically they use the verbiage of gold coins and sweeps coins. I can make a purchase of gold coins. These are this is social currency, can be still used for slot machines and to bet on sports and to use for live dealer. And as a reward for the gold coins purchase, I'm getting sweeps coins. And the sweeps coins can also be used for live dealer or slots or sports. And those sweeps coins can typically be redeemed for real money. So if you go on the website of any of these sweeps casinos, it looks and feels just like a real casino. But because of this sweepstakes model, because of the sweepstakes economy, it's operational in a number of different states.
Understood. And, you know, it's been around for a long time, but it's really only in the last number of years, like VGW or Chumba, or one of, like, been around, they've been in this for, like, ages, right? But it's really only in the last, say, 3-4 years that it's really skyrocketed. What do you think's changed there? What do you think's driven that?
I mean, I think part of it is just like the lack of online casino regulation over the last several years, right? There is this white space for online casino where a vast majority of the U.S., if they want to go online and play slots or play blackjack and table games, they don't have the opportunity to do that in a legal way. So there is this opening. And then I think at some point it kind of snowballed, right? There's more B2B platforms that are out there that are supporting it. There's just more technology. We work with different platforms that can get you up and running in a very efficient manner. I mean, you know, the bureaucracy that goes into being an online casino, a regulated online casino in the States is intense. It's a very scrutinous process. You have to go state by state for the states that allow it. You know, there's license holders. It's a very intense process. The process to become a sweepstakes casino is very much lighter. And so the barriers to entry are low. And I think, you know, over the last few years, we've seen, obviously, VGW was at the forefront of it. But, you know, we've had a few other disruptors to the space that have really jumped in.
It's very polite. The barriers of entry are low.
Yeah,
but Fenton, when you were pushing Bonus Finder into the US, you had to the barriers to entry for affiliates in the US. You had to fill out some forms, didn't you?
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Like it's like with like. So I totally get it. Like the level of paperwork required to be a licensed affiliate. In fairness, it's a lot of it's very similar to what you have to be a licensed operator. But then with the operator, all your suppliers, all your game providers, everything that feeds into your platform also needs licensing. So it gets massively complicated, where we were just like one small company with a small team. So it was very, very simple. In a way, it was 5% of the paperwork. But it was kind of the same forms, just less people having to submit or less companies or whatever. But yeah, it's a torturous, and look, it goes back to legacy US history of, you know, organized crime in the gambling industry, and trying to keep that out is kind of the context for that.
Do you think it's, when you say it's trying to keep it, it goes back to organized crime, do you think it's like being a doorman, stopping people coming in saying, have you got any weapons on you? No, you should take these in, then it's a bit rough in there.
No, but it's kind of like, you know, you got to make sure that the guy doing the catering isn't organized, right? And massively overcharging for the cheese sandwiches or the people selling the uniforms. So you've got to look at, so what happens with an operator is it's not just the operator who gets licensed, but all of their suppliers need to be licensed.
Yeah.
Which is huge burden. And that's assuming you actually get the gaming license as well, right? Which is also a limited supply. So it's a very, very difficult process. So it makes sense that, like, I could do that or I could do this. So, like, from a business model perspective, it seems far more attractive, for sure. So obviously with lots of news, so there's kind of a classic cycle, right? There's the gambling industry, I always say, isn't very original, but it's really good at copying good ideas, right? So obviously, you know, the barriers to entry, software providers, everything's more sophisticated. So it's never been easier to launch a sweeps casino. Everybody has been piling into the market for a while now. And there's more coming. That creates an acquisition, that this is your classic, it's like a new market regulating, right? Like Brazil, or this market's just done this, or we're all gonna go do this market, whatever the latest hot trend is, the industry is very good at herding around it. And what we see is acquisition is big. Everybody's keen, everybody's got budgets, everybody's spending money, everybody's pulling players into the door. And then the next challenge is, we're like, retention, what are our customer values? Is this backing out to a return on ad spend? What's our ROI? Are we actually profitable? So what do you, and look, you guys are the retention guys, right? So like, is this, are we at the point where they're ready for retention, or are they still kind of like running down the hill screaming acquisition? Like, where do you feel the market is right now?
Yeah, I mean, going back to the first thing you said, I have no idea who said this, but I've definitely heard this quote before. They say history doesn't repeat itself, but it rhymes. Yeah. And even in the 6 years that I've been at Optimove, early on in the real money gaming space, it was very much a land grab, and new states would open up, and we see operators throwing out these huge bonuses to get players in the door and acquire new customers. And then at some point, probably in the last 2 or 3 years, it's shifted to retention and just more strategic bonusing strategies and just CRM and having a more fundamentally sound business. And I think sweepstakes is following that same trend. I think we work with a lot of operators that are putting CRM in place even before they have their first customer. Even when they're pre-launch, they don't have any customers in their database yet, but they believe just in having a really strong foundation of CRM and retention in place, so that when that first customer comes in the door, they have a strategy for keeping that player, retaining them, maximizing their lifetime value. You know, there's so much data out there that the importance of that first touch, that first engagement, and as CACs are increasing, right, it's becoming increasingly competitive in sweepstakes. There are hundreds of sweepstakes operators out there. It is just a vast abyss. We talked about the low barriers to entry. I mean, there's new ones popping up every day, and it's supremely competitive. And if you go to any of these sites, I mean, you know, some operators do a better job than others differentiating themselves through games and product and all that stuff. But if you go to any of these sites, more or less, it's an online casino. And with hundreds of options out there and customer acquisition costs rising, retention is becoming really critically important in the space.
Those kind of touch points, that for, like, I'm a big believer of, you know, do the basics really well. And like all touch points matter. Like, great example is what Apple did for the packaging industry is nothing. Like, Apple saved the packaging industry. All of a sudden, everybody cares about their unboxing experience. Where before the iPhone, you got a phone in a plastic bag. Nobody cared, right? Now it's like this glorious, it slides off, everything pops in. But if you take a casino experience of like what happens in those first moments, that first, you know, your first journey, your first engagement with the brand, the first 24 hours, the first week, that becomes really, like, particularly in a competitive market where there's hundreds of options of, oh, actually, I don't like this, I'm going to go over here. So when your competitors are a click away, how, like, what does a good welcome journey look like in that space?
Yeah. Do you guys have the show The First 48 over there? Do you know about this TV show? I've never seen it either, but I guess the concept is that in crime, they're trying to solve murders and high profile crimes. And the first 48 hours of this critical period, and then if they don't solve it, or they don't have a suspect, or they don't, again, I've never seen the show, but if they don't have some sort of lead or arrest within the first 48 hours, then the likelihood of them solving the case drops off dramatically. So, you know, I guess there's this TV program focused around the first 48 hours. And obviously online gaming is a similar type of concept, right? When we see customers come in the door, those first 24 hours, that incubation period is critical. And obviously online gaming is way more important than solving murders, but the same logic applies. And yeah, really strong welcome journeys are pivotal. And being able to differentiate between different types of players in that first day, in those first few hours, player attention is fragile, competition is endless. And that initial experience really defines if a player is going to stay or not. You know, again, we sit in the middle of the sweepstakes industry. We collect so much data, and the same data applies for real money gaming too. But, you know, the players that end up being really long, you know, long tail, high value players long term, a high, high majority of them are making their first purchase in sweeps and making their first coins purchase in that first few hours of registering. And then when they do have that first purchase, you know, if I'm coming in, maybe from a specific acquisition source or a specific affiliate or a specific influencer, and I'm making a purchase of X number of coins, and Fintan is coming in from a different source of acquisition and has a completely different, you know, initial purchase experience, like, we probably should get two different treatments. And that welcome journey is critical.
Sorry, John's fixing his microphone.
No.
Okay.
It's really
maybe
loud, mate.
Is it really loud now?
It was, yeah.
I think I know which side the volume loudness is then now. Is that better? Brilliant. The first 48 should be a show about solving murders, but pre-1951, 52, and just have it in the first 48 US states.
I just assumed it was some sort of Star Wars spinoff. It feels like the first 48 feels like some sort of Star Wars Stormtrooper battalion or something.
Spot the nerd.
I didn't know where you were going there. I thought you were going to try to combine them solving a murder, but also retaining them as a sweepstakes player in the same show.
I do see some potential for an OptiMove series, though.
Yeah.
Oh, LinkedIn, the series. So there's a murder, but you've got to then tie in what the murderer taught you about B2B sales.
Yeah, we like to talk about positionless marketing. You know, you can be a part-time detective and a part-time marketer, and we can combine it into one show.
There we go.
My God, who did this? The positionless murderer.
Let me run the report because I've got all
positionless
the data,
murderer.
Right?
Also, always gets me in these shows where the lead detective always has to say to somebody, "Run their financials." What? Like, you're not doing the fucking basics. You know, these people can't think or breathe unless you tell them to. God. Anyway, it's by the by. I was thinking about packaging, actually. You had to bring up Apple packaging. You know, my brother works in the packaging industry. Do you know that?
Oh, really?
He does, yes. And every couple of years, there's a packaging expo at the same time as G2E. And so I see him sometimes in Vegas, because I don't see him very often because he lives in the States. But I was thinking, it was a really interesting comparison you made. Apple saved the packaging industry. So I was thinking about the innovation that Amazon made, which I actually think is massive. And I was thinking about this just the other day.
The box.
No, not just that. The tape.
Mm.
The degradable, recyclable tape. That is a business that's like, okay, there's going to be shitloads more of this in use. We have to do something before the critics arrive.
Well, it's more than that with the tape. It's also the anti-tear tape, right? So it's...
Yeah, it does like three, four different things. It's absolute little bit of genius.
Do you know who's also making a fortune, since we're just doing like little niche businesses? We will get back to you, Jeff, I promise. The the guy who invented the bag that you put your phone into that blocks signals. So he saw a Chappelle show. And Chappelle, or there was a quote thing, an interview with Chappelle, and he was giving out about people recording his like open mic nights and stuff like that, because, and then putting it on internet. So he's kind of working out jokes, and it was really ruining his experience. And so the guy had this product, and he went and found Chappelle and said, I will use this at your events. And so Chappelle was the first one to roll this out, where like everybody in the audience had their phone in this baggie. And then all the comedians and stuff started doing it. But then he pivoted to schools. And so now, like, so many schools in the US are forcing the kids to, because the kids aren't talking to each other anymore in schools, because they're all on their phones. So particularly like the freshmen and stuff coming in, they're all nervous, not talking to each other, everyone's on their phones. And so phones become this massive disruptor or massive issue, in particularly in high school.
Do you listen to the MFM podcast?
Yeah.
Is that where you heard? Yeah, me too. I just heard this one.
Super cool.
Yeah.
But so the point about the Amazon packaging was that they recognized that there was this bulk area, this huge high volume package area, and that they had this thing that was going to affect it. And it was going to affect the viability of recycling the cardboard in their massive increase. And obviously it's still pre-COVID, so they didn't see that coming, but it just turned out to be particularly salient. And so more cardboard is able to be recycled and blah, blah, blah. So it's kind of Apple may have saved the packaging industry, but Amazon kind of gave it CPR.
My analogies aren't good lately. On the outside of the packaging, like that's just, oh my God, he's getting an Amazon delivery. All right. That's brilliant marketing. It's like the, remember like when Hotmail and stuff first came out, it's like sent by Hotmail or sent by Apple Mail or sent by Gmail they auto added it as a signature. Mm-hmm. The Amazon packaging thing was the exact same idea. It was super smart.
That's why they're, you know, billionaires, and we're here.
Humble.
Go on,
just
say it.
The positionless murderer takes off. We'll be right up there with Bezos.
It's coming. It's coming.
I've got so many ideas, Jeff. I've got so many ideas. Some of them I can say out loud. Only maybe 30%, to be fair.
I have got
a proper question.
Oh, do you? Okay, go on. Sorry.
I have, yeah.
Go on.
Maybe I should save it. I don't know. But Jeff, you're the first person I think that we've had on this that might be in a position to answer this question. Hence, you're the first person I'm asking it to. there's so much guff, I think, about cannibalization, player cannibalization, specifically in the US market, right? Now, sweeps have been around in online gaming for quite a long time. I have a theory about this, and I want to know if my theory is correct, that there are three distinct players with some overlap, but not nearly as much as we believe, not nearly as much as we are being led to believe by people who have vested interest. Sorry, stakeholders. So my theory is that the sweeps player is a sweeps player. They're not necessarily an online casino player. They're not a sportsbook customer. There will be some crossover, but they're not doing that instead of that. they wouldn't necessarily have ever looked at that. There's far more likely to be a casual games player. The online casino player, obviously the number of states is very, very limited anyway. But the online casino player isn't necessarily a land-based casino player that's been stolen. Again, some overlap, but I don't believe there's as much as we may have been led to believe. Am I bonkers? Is this cannibalization or are these distinct player sets?
I mean, there's a lot of studies out there that kind of dispel the cannibalization theory, especially on the land-based online side. I think on the sweepstakes side, it's hard to say, especially because, you know, there's such a limited footprint in the U.S. where there would be cannibalization. But and the iGaming states, the handful of iGaming states have largely outlawed sweepstakes. So, it's tough to
that,
really. Like,
that doesn't always stop people, though, Jeff.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. I do think that there is a distinction in players. Is there overlap? Sure. You know, it kind of is similar. It reminds me. So we have a handful of customers in the secondary lottery space that, you know, like the lotto.coms of the world. And a lot of what they see in their business is that a lottery player is a completely different type of player than an online casino player, than an online sportsbook player. And I think, you know, maybe from the outside looking in, people are making these generalizations that, hey, they're putting money down to try to win a prize, a payout, an amount, a jackpot, whatever, and that can cross over a bunch of different sub-verticals within
games. Surely they'd be doing that in a casino otherwise.
No, I think that, to Jeff's point of, because sweeps is only available in states where basically online gambling isn't available, the Californias, the Texases, the places like this.
Most of them.
It literally, like, if anything, the popularity of the sweeps makes the point in case for legalizing online gambling in your state, right?
Sure. And the other thing around, you know, there's so much percentage of the activity and so much percentage of the players are free-to-play players. Like, a disproportionately high number of players are AMOE, so they're not actually making real money purchases, and, you know, they're still playing and they're still active and they're still engaging. They're just kind of collecting their coins and they're playing the social side of the house. So, you know, that's social gaming. I mean, that's a completely different industry.
And I think that was, again, completely agree. I think the biggest competition for sweeps is actually other mobile phone games, right? And that's the biggest, like a Candy Crush or that type of fun, simple game to play. And we actually saw that in the UK. So the UK was when Candy Crush first came out and became like the big game at the time, like the global game. Online bingo took an absolute hammering. And there was this perfect, I had this perfect graph of Candy Crush going up, online bingo going down. And then you could see when Candy Crush kind of, at some point it fell off and then bingo picked back up again.
I think the real
casual, simple, social, appy type games of 10 minutes on the couch. I think that's who it's competing against.
People talk a lot about wallet share. And I think the real commodity that we're all vying for is attention, right? You're going to spend your 2, 3, 4, 5 hours on your phone a day, whatever it is. And are you going to spend it on Reddit and YouTube, or are you going to spend it on a sweepstakes casino? Or, you know, I think that's really what everyone's after, not necessarily wallet share.
There are only so many hours in a day.
Well, look, people listening to this could be watching Netflix or Pornhub or reading the newspaper or,
you know,
playing Candy Crush, optimizing their CRM journeys through automation. They could be doing anything.
Well, let's go back to that point, Fenton. And back to our corporate overlord representative, Jeff Laniato.
So you're saying the player, the patterns, and obviously the game mechanics and the business models are different, but it rhymes. From a CRM perspective, in terms of like, metrics or engagement methods and all that kind of stuff, everything's like, if you're in the gambling industry, this is going to feel very familiar, or are there subtle nuances or tweaks?
Yeah, there's a lot of similarities. I mean, there are nuances, especially around the high percentage of free-to-play players and AMOE players. I mean, I think that's, you know, going back to the welcome journey in the first 24 hours and how critical that is. I mean, understanding the different types of players, the player personas really early on is key. And I like to use a lot of analogies. This one's a little racy, I guess. But, you know, it's a lot like dating. It's a lot like a first date, right? And making a good first impression. And, you know, I think a lot of, to stay with the dating analogy, a lot of operators treat first-time depositors, first-time purchasers as one-night stands. And, you know, to really build this sustainable relationship, to build out high lifetime value players, you have to engage with them in a personalized way, tailor the content to them, celebrate milestones and anniversaries to keep the dating analogy.
Divorce them, take half their assets. You haven't thought this one through, mate. Don't use this in G2E.
Jeff, I do have a question related to something you brought up just now. So I'm presently making a real mess of dating. Can I implement OptiMove in my Tinder experience?
Absolutely, yeah. There's an API to Tinder. No, I think my advice for you in the dating world is just don't say positionless murderer, and
that's a good point.
Maybe don't share the link to this podcast with them. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Don't tell them you have a podcast. White middle aged man with a podcast. That's exactly what the world needs. God damn it! I'm tired of being suppressed.
Or if you're going to talk about the podcast, just say some people are saying that I'm the Joe Rogan of the gaming world.
That's literally, yeah, but without the money.
The ones that hate me.
All the worst people.
I do love that Rogan's podcast is often cited by people who are talking about how they, you know, they don't listen to the mainstream media. They go to alternative sources for their news. And you're like, this is the world's most listened to podcast that generates $100 million in revenues. I'm not sure there is a more mainstream podcast than that. The breakfast thing that you're doing at G2E.
What's on the menu?
Yeah. What, are you actually serving breakfast or is it just at breakfast time?
So we are serving breakfast and it is at breakfast time.
Okay. Is it a buffet or what?
Yeah, we've done these before, typically a buffet, omelet bar is key. I little nice. Fun fact about myself, not that you asked, but
I look like a man who eats a lot of eggs. I'm going to say that.
Exactly. That's exactly right. You nailed
it. If you're going to say egg white omelets, I'm going to reach into the internet and I am going to slap you around the face.
What's wrong with
you? I didn't have this on my agenda, but I do a combination of egg whites and yolks. I probably have 5 or 6 eggs a day.
You can just call that an
for like
egg.
25 years, but yeah, but my I don't want to say dream job, but like my job, if money meant nothing and I had no family to support and I can just do it, I'd love to be just like an omelet bar guy at a resort. Just, I never get tired of making omelets. And so at some point when I really make it, when we exit OptiMove, I'm going to be the omelet by gar. Oh, clever. I'm going to be the omelet by gar. Instead of speaking on stage at the sweepstakes breakfast, I'm going to be the guy making the omelet.
What's your go-to omelet recipe? What have you got?
Yeah, is there a special secret ingredient?
Splash of milk, get it a little fluffy, mozzarella cheese, egg whites, eggs, real simple.
So like, I've got a cheeky ingredient in scrambled eggs that people are like, not sure about that. But then you serve it to them and they're like, holy shit, that's good. I use double cream instead of milk.
Huh.
And I also, I learned this thing. It's for color and a little bit for taste, but for color. To add extra yolks, which makes a massive difference. But yeah, I eat a lot of eggs as well. Fenton, to your question, what's wrong with an egg white omelette? Well, what's wrong with an egg white omelette is that most of the good shit in an egg is in the yellow bit. It's in the yolk.
That's right.
Well, it depends how many yolks. I will do a lot of egg whites.
It doesn't depend on any number of yolks. If you're having an egg white omelette, it hasn't got any fucking yolks in it.
Well, I'd mix egg whites with whole eggs and build it up. Volume. I have a big omelet for breakfast every morning.
But Fenton, why not just use the whole egg?
Because the whole egg, too many. Like if you have 5 or 6 whole eggs, that's quite a lot of fat. And I'm trying to put more protein, so I'll have say 2 eggs and then a lot of egg whites.
Did you see
something he got from Rogan?
Did you see Rocky? Rocky in the first movie when he's making his thing to drink in the morning, did he separate the yolks? Did he fuck?
Do I look like Rocky? Do you see?
Do you want to? Do you want to look like Rocky?
Wait, I got to lose,
dude. Like, okay, if you want it, if you want to build some muscle, I'm just saying here. You might criticize. You might criticize how I eat. You might criticize how I eat, but the one thing I'm very good at is building muscle.
It's not about build. I've got to lose weight, John. I'm on a weight loss thing. So muscle, gain some muscle, but more weight loss. That's my thing right now. That's why my diet is the way. All right, so it's going to be an omelet bar, and that's going to be fucking banging, right? That's perfect.
That's right.
It's exactly what we need to do.
It's basically an omelet bar with a side of sweepstakes. That's how they got me there.
It feels like it's something you could do with the eggs, right? It feels like some of the eggs are solid gold. But we won't know until you know.
I like it.
It feels like there's a game or something in there. Maybe.
Actually, here, this is an idea.
Oh no, this one's chocolate.
No, have you seen that? Have you seen that thing? And I can't remember how you do it, but there's a way of agitating an egg so it all mixes within the shell. Right?
Okay.
And it's something that I think it's Asian in origin. It kind of sounds Asian, and it's like this golden egg idea. But you could do that. You could have some hard boiled eggs. There's a technique to it that I seem to remember somebody's actually may have invented a device to do this. But it's a thing, and you could serve these golden eggs. Just saying.
Just when you think we've maxed out innovation with eggs, they come up with something new.
It's just nature's gift, really, isn't it?
It's also, it's this podcast's gift, Fintan.
We are a gift. You're right.
And we just keep giving. And we never ask for anything much, apart from our corporate overlords.
Yeah, just sign here.
Are you out of questions?
I've got one. I'm just trying to figure out how to reword it.
How to make it respectable.
What benchmarks prove that CRM fundamentals matter? Do we really need to discuss that? Of course CRM matters. No, but if somebody, let's rephrase it. If somebody was sitting on the fence of, I don't know, using CRM software, fuck, we just do it the old school way, we call people. Like, what's the, like, I don't know. I'm not actually, forget this question. It's of course.
Yeah, I can run with it a little bit. I mean, just use it. I can run with it. I mean, like we talk to a lot of operators that are early stage. They just launched. They haven't invested in CRM yet. And I would say the one thing that a lot of operators are not doing that they probably should be doing is just leveraging real-time data better. Right. So we talked about like the first 48 hours, the first 24 hours, that critical period. Like when you're trying to market to a player, without real-time data, if you're just getting data on a once per day basis and having no insight between these 24-hour blips of what a player is doing, it's like trying to have a conversation with somebody when you have your plugs in and you're not hearing what they're saying. I mean, like who a player is when they wake up at 9 a.m. that day is not necessarily who they are at 5 o'clock that afternoon. Like, you know, if I'm a churn player, if I haven't played on the site in 45 days and I'm living in the churn life cycle, and maybe there's a scheduled email that's going to go out that says, hey, Jeff, we miss you. Here's, you know, 10 free sweeps coins. Here's your favorite game image. But I make a purchase before that email goes out, and now I'm active, and now I'm, you know, engaged again, and I've kind of reactivated myself. And you don't have that visibility into what I'm doing in real time. You're going to send that email out anyway. I mean, you're doing a couple things. One is just emotionally unintelligent, right? We're saying, hey, we miss you and you should miss me. I'm here, right? It just has no insight into what's happening at the moment. But probably more importantly, just from an economic standpoint, you're issuing bonus dollars that don't necessarily need to be given. And, you know, I think one of the things I said early on is just this refocus around generosity strategy and bonusing and kind of smart promotions. And, you know, nobody wants to be giving bonus dollars to players that don't need it. And when you don't have that real-time insight and you don't know what a player is doing in the moment, you just lack the ability to make those good decisions about what you should be sending players.
Makes sense.
So it looks like CRM fundamentals do matter, Fintan.
I'd have it plugged in before I even launched. I'd be definitely in that other bucket. I've just, if I'm spending money, I'm going to make sure I'm getting every fucking penny of it back.
Case closed. I feel like to tie the bow on the theme of the episode, we need like a snarky, you know, put the sunglasses on, we solved the murder type of line.
Explosions.
Caruso.
Explosions.
Yeah.
To the old coffin. To the old Dr. Dre. Da 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 da. Beep, beep, beep. Beep, beep,
beep. Beep, beep, beep. Oh, God. I can feel my son cringing right now. It's like, Dad, stop this. You put this on the internet? Stop.
You can do podcasts, Dad, but do them on your own.
Never tag me. I am not your son online.
Wow. Jeff, speaking off the record, what's it like working for Optimove?
I love it. I mean, I can speak on the record. I mean, I've been here for 6 years. I like it a lot. It's a great product. It's a great industry. I came, I was selling a software into the education technology space before this, selling to school districts and administrators. And, you know, these are my people in this industry. I feel like it's just it's a crew that I identify with more and have more fun with and enjoy. And yeah, it's a great company. I mean, I've recruited several friends and people in my network to come work here over the years. And yeah, I mean, I like it.
That's cool. That's cool.
Do you think he was a little bit too positive there though, Finn?
I actually believe every word of it. You know, you think about it, right? You're sitting into a school district, you know, you're sitting on some crappy cafeteria bench drinking shit coffee, or you're going to G2E with an omelet bar, right? It just doesn't stack up. Just doesn't stack up. Different worlds. Different worlds.
Yeah.
I get it.
Okay. And if omelets are your big thing, then I've also thought that Vegas is a great breakfast destination.
Well, it's the home of the breakfast steak, right?
Yeah. Plus, unlike in the UK, you can get poached eggs everywhere. Did I ever tell you this story, Fenton? I was in... This blew my mind.
Cool.
I was staying in Bill's. Now, some of my dodgiest stories have come from, started with that scene. I was staying in Bill's this 1 year. But this one, it's not a dodgy story. But I went out for a run the one morning and I did like 7 or 8 miles, right? So I was reasonably fit at the time. I mean, I plodded up and down the strip in the dry, on the concrete punishment. So anyway, I did this run. And I went to have some breakfast after. And I knew I wasn't going to eat again until late in the evening. Right? Fair enough. So I ordered some steak and eggs. I was on my own. I ordered steak, eggs, some additional sourdough. So I think I had 4 slices of sourdough in total. It was a side of hash browns for Europeans. And I ordered, I think, 6 eggs, right? And the lady, bear in mind, this is in Las Vegas. The lady looks at me and she goes, "Oh, no, that's too much." I'm like looking around.
Oh, no.
Cut you off.
At the mountains of food on other people's tables. And I'm like, "Nah, it'll be fine. It'll be fine." She's like, "Are you sure?" I'm like, "Yes. Yes, I am." Anyway, she goes away. I demolish the whole breakfast. I think about ordering some more. And she comes back over and no word of a lie. She looks at my plate. She looks at me. She goes, "Wow, you're a really great eater."
I have a bunch of reactions to that. One, did you say miles for my benefit? You ran 7 or 8 miles?
No, because I did.
No, but not kilometers.
No, I'm in England. Well, actually, I'm in Wales.
Did the English use miles and miles per hour and feet and inches? And then in other scenarios, it's all metric. So it's a flip.
We like fucking with people.
Mainland Europe is all metric.
We don't like people to feel like they know what's going on too much.
Got it. I don't know if you were just pandering to me. Like, "Oh, that's miles." Otherwise, he'll lose the story. He'll have no idea what's going on.
No, so I did 10 or 12 k.
But But it is good to see that they are practicing responsible eating.
Yeah.
In addition to RG.
That's an intervention. Like, it was like, are you sure this is too much?
That's right.
Your cholesterol is 230. Are you sure that you want six eggs?
That's a good point. It's a good point.
Do you know, I had a blood test recently and I had a conversation with the doctor about my results.
As you should.
Yes, I did. And he was very complimentary. He said, if you're thinking about buying life insurance or health insurance, now would be a great time to do it because any insurer would be delighted with these results. Just saying. I'm the oldest one here by a country fucking mile. Just saying. I just want to get something good about me out there just in case anybody is listening to my fucking Tinder Optimove hopes. Yeah, get with me, ladies, because I'll be around for a while. That's never going to work, is it? Yeah. Get with me, ladies, because I could die soon.
I've got life insurance. Yeah. I've got good life insurance. I'll pay off your mortgage if you kill me. And this is our segue into, this is how the murder mystery begins, right?
He's on
Tinder. He's doing his thing. He's just taking out his life insurance policy. We're backtracking this. It makes sense.
Is it going to be a poker face? Sorry.
Oh, okay. In the episode arc, you know, it's going to have us suspecting the girl, but it would be Rob from the first 30 seconds of the call who popped in and popped out. He would be the twist, the M. Night Shyamalan twist.
Nice. Or it's Fintan. Just snap. Fintan snaps. There's this whole backstory of why Fintan snapped.
We could do it like the original Clue movie. Where when that was really, are you familiar with Clue? You're not going to be, are you?
Board game.
Yeah, where they did a movie of the board game. And the movie had multiple different endings. And you didn't necessarily know which one you were going to see.
Yes, I remember that.
There's actually a way to tell who the bad guy is in a movie or TV show now. If they're using an Android phone. So Apple has this thing where they won't let you use an iPhone if you're the baddie. So the baddies are the ones using Androids or not using an iPhone.
That's interesting because for years and years and years, you only saw Apple products in movies because they were the only tech provider that didn't require permission. So good guys and bad guys, but everybody used Apple products in movies. So it'd be a really weird thing if they've genuinely done that. That would just be fucking stupid.
Unless like a Microsoft has like bought the sponsorship for like all the computers or something, but it's so you want to figure it out is whoever's got the Android phone.
There were a few movies for a while where the villain always drank Maker's Mark whiskey, the most high profile of which was the first Sam Raimi Spider-Man movie, the Tobey Maguire one, the Green Goblin, despite, you know, being this billionaire tech company owner, is drinking Maker's Mark, which you can buy in literally any off license in the US. Look, I was impressed by it.
It's a strategy. Why not?
He's saving a lot of money there. In reality, he'd be drinking Van Winkle or whatever. But yeah, what do I know? So, Jeff, somebody's just started digging up the street outside my house. I don't think the microphone's picking it up, but it is fucking annoying.
Oh,
it's fucking irritating. So I think we're going to tie the episode up there. Thank you for joining us very, very much. I hope G2E goes very, very well. How do people get invited to the breakfast? Do they follow the link in the show notes and they fill out the form and they ask nicely? Do they have to pre-order their omelets or is that all done on the day?
It's all made to order.
Holy shit.
Fresh omelets.
Yeah.
Where is it? Where's it at?
It's at the Venetian at Bazaar. Something.
Oh, that the meat restaurant.
Bazaar, is that a place?
Oh yeah. That's the meat restaurant. They used to be further down the strip. Fucking good restaurant.
So I think they still have that at Sahara. I think the restaurant, but they have a new location. It's in the Venetian. To answer your question,
is it SLS before it was Sahara? That's where it was, isn't it? SLS. I can't remember, but I went there and I ate a lot of meat. It was tasty.
Yeah. So you can also just reach out to me on LinkedIn if that's preferred.
There we go.
For specific omelet requests.
Okay, sweet. Well, Jeff's LinkedIn link will also be in the show notes. So everything's in there. Jeff, thank you very, very much for joining us. We appreciate your company and your golf balls. And again, for anybody that's just listening, they're on the wall behind it. If you've enjoyed this episode of the Gambling Files podcast, please find us on LinkedIn. Give us a big, juicy, succulent like. That nearly went wrong. You can find us under the name The Gambling Files Podcast. You find us on Twitter under The Gambling Files. I think the handle is just at Gambling Files. You can connect to myself, John Bruford, or Fintan Costello, also on LinkedIn. We're also both on Twitter. And you can find all of our previous episodes at www.thegamblingfiles.com. If you enjoyed it, please share. Tell your friends, tell your family, tell your colleagues, and we'll see you next time.